Starting up with Virtue Zone on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, we are. You're welcome to Starting Up with Virtue Zone. Good to have you on board. Neil Petch is alongside me, putting a smile on my face as always. Mr. P, good to see you. Good week for you.
It's been a great week, good. Tom. It's been a great week. Yeah, it's time, you know, a little bit more space, which means brain space, so we can start being strategic.
Yeah. I mean, we've got Eid just around the corner, haven't we?
We do.
And, you know, we're a lot of people planning for Eid at the moment. A lot of people planning for... I just wonder whether we're going to see the, you know, hit the floor running fast pace that we've got used to here in recent times after Eid, or if we're going to see a little bit of a slowdown. Things that suggest otherwise for you, don't they?
Well, we have actually... obviously, we're going to be talking to the House of Hype and Hyperspace, where perhaps... you can move time. We'll find out from our guests in a minute. But we at Virtue Zone have moved time because, as you know, we open and facilitate businesses in seconds these days using our robots where we're working 24/7.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're just going to move things faster and we're still closing May. So, you see, we can move time sometimes backwards.
To time? What is this time thing that you talk of? Right, let's get into our guest this afternoon. There are parks, there are venues, and then there are hyperspace parks and venues. It's the company behind the likes of AO Universe, an entertainment venue offering a digital experience in the heart of Wafi Mall. It's also opened another venue in Riyadh called House of Hype, soon to open in Dubai Mall very soon as well. They're spaces, but they are different than any space you have seen before. If you want to know what's special about these venues, well, just ask the founder and the CEO of Hyperspace, Alexander Heller. He's been kind enough to join us live here in the studio. Alexander, good afternoon to you.
Thanks so much for having me here. Such a pleasure to be on the radio with you.
No, it's great to have you on board. Great to see you again as well. Great to hear that things are going so well in the region for you. A lot of time, a lot of investment going into these special ideas. And I suppose that's the perfect place for us to talk about. You know, everyone talks about, you know, the whole idea of pivoting, the whole idea of disrupting. But how many people have thought about disrupting space itself, you know, a bare piece of space and turning that into something completely different? Hyperspace is building entertainment parks fit for a digital world. How do you explain that to our listeners and viewers out there?
Well, I think when we started the company, you know, you look at the kind of market opportunity in a macro level. So, you know, what larger industry are you creating a solution for? So for us, it was very much looking at the future of retail developments, the future of shopping malls, really against a kind of retail apocalypse that, you know, started pre-COVID and really was, you know, expanded on through COVID. And so for us, we were looking at building an entertainment business that was very much anchored in and partnering with retail developers to draw traffic back into those shopping malls. I mean, I'll give you a great statistic, which I love. You know, 98% of our visitors that come to AO Universe come to Wafi Mall specifically for AO Universe. So I think we increase the unique visitation of that mall by 16% in year one,
wow,
which is just crazy. So it really shows that, you know, new format entertainment really built around the idea of the experience economy can have a massive impact on retail development. So it's taking this very big, old world, expensive problem and kind of giving a new kind of sheen to an entertainment product that fits in there. And ultimately that links to, you know, the consumer. And so on a macro level, you're looking at, you know, how do you get this done? Building a entertainment park within a shopping mall. On a micro level, building a product that people want to consume. And so we looked at, you know, the kind of biggest strategies around kind of content creation, social media creation, et cetera, as like large driving factors for people to come into these spaces. So if you look at AO Universe, 57% of our customers find out about AO Universe through someone else's UGC user-generated content. So when you look at it from that perspective, basically we've built a space. You look extraordinary in every single photo. You really built for social media and content creation. And so that's, you know, one of the biggest attract loops in the world today. So
you've got a background in creativity. What was your eureka moment when you realized that this is what the world needed and this is what you wanted to do?
I think when I looked at the industry, I, you know, like any young founder, you know, your biggest barrier to an idea is capital.
Yeah.
I developed these two dummy brands originally. This is right before COVID. I developed these two dummy brands. One was called the Museum of Beauty and one was called the Museum of Sneakers. I had a bunch of beautiful renders put together, some nice presentations, et cetera, as if it was a whole big thing. And I met with two big mall developers in Dubai and I showed them these two brands and I said, I need about 30,000 square feet of space. It's going to cost about $10 million to build each of these. I have $5 million already, which I didn't have at the time, to put into this. Would you write a $5 million check as a CapEx investment into the venue? And I received two term sheets back. And so all of a sudden I said, wow, I'm holding on to two pieces of paper. Then I took those two term sheets to an investor here and I said, you know, I have these two term sheets. I have $10 million on paper here. Would you want to buy 20% of the company? And, you know, they agreed to then fund another $5 million for 20% of the company. And then I ended up not doing that deal, ended up going through a more formal fundraise process and actually raised at a higher valuation. But basically, I think it's the power of kind of momentum. So we saw an opportunity where, you know, someone could solve a problem for themselves, you know, lease a space, drive foot traffic back into their mall, and they were willing to put kind of their money where their mouth was, which is pretty standard practice, you know, TI allowances, et cetera. But basically, yeah, but just built in on that momentum.
I do, and I visited the Woffy as a result. I'm quite interested in repeat, in return customers, because, you know, you've got the sort of Mall of the Emirates, the ski slope, and you've got go-karting, and you've got that sort of thing. I love the fact that you're solving this problem that the mall owners have. How do you go about keeping the customers?
Well, it really depends on the market. You know, in Dubai, you don't really need to keep the customer. We're, you know, I've quickly learned Dubai might be the best market in the world for my product. I have, you know, you have a massive tourist audience here, obviously, the third most visited city in the world by international tourists, number one tourist spending audience, average visitor spends about 4 days here. And so we're not really dependent on repeat visitation. 78% of our customers are actually tourists. So while we have, I think, 87% say they'll come back. You know, I'm not really, I have a new customer base every single day in Dubai. Our House of Hype Park is built more for repeat visitation. It's kind of built on a game economy and it incentivizes kind of gameplay and, you know, earning points, et cetera. So it's built on that game mechanic of let's keep on going back and earning more and earning more. But it's not really something, you know, we used to put a lot of stress on it. It used to be in initial investor pitches before we had a product. Everyone would ask that question. But once you have, you know, that sort of performance, it kind of becomes secondary a little bit.
And what have you got out to pitch at the moment? What can I get 20% of? And then you're going to sell it to someone else. For
you know, I'll tell you.
What's happening in Saudi Arabia?
So, you know, in Saudi Arabia, we built House of Hype there. Saudi Arabia is an interesting economy. Obviously, you have a lot of enthusiasm in the entertainment sector. You have a lot of capital going into large development projects. I would say we're still very early days there. I mean, I took a big gamble in Saudi. Most people go into Saudi and they say, you know, I want to sell you something or I'll franchise this to you or I'll take a kind of, you know, but I'm not going to put kind of my money where my mouth is. I said, let's go build an owner-operator business there, which is going to be our responsibility. We built a 60,000 square foot park in the middle of Riyadh Boulevard. That was my way of going to market and saying, I'm here and I'm not really going anywhere and I'm going to put something to market quickly. And this will be an investment on, you know, building a larger business in this economy. The consumer base is early. We've kind of hedged our bets on a kind of short-term, long-term bet. You know, we obviously want to make money in the short term, but we've definitely taken a long-term view to the country. So in Saudi, yeah, working with the large kind of PIF-owned entertainment organizations. And then, you know, we're just looking for the next great, you know, opportunity to, you know, bring a product like Aya in particular, I think, to, you know, international markets. These businesses, you know, really spit off cash once you open them up. I mean, we're running at Aya about a 60% net profit margin, which is like a SaaS business, not a physical entertainment park.
Wonderful.
And so, you know, finding and identifying the right opportunities, the right location is key.
Do you find many sort of me too businesses seeking to replicate what you're doing?
So we have very high barrier to entry in our space because it's very CapEx intensive.
Okay.
So we were very smart in how we built our capital stack. We worked with debt partners. We obviously raised capital from the mall developer and then we invested capital ourselves through, we've done three funding rounds for our business. We're a venture backed business. You know, for someone else to come into the market and build a competitor at the level of our product, I mean, you know, $20-30 million parks. So you kind of, you know, and that's to get to your proof of concept. So quite expensive.
And where are we at? I mean, you mentioned House of Hype down in the kingdom at the moment, well received. You've also mentioned imminent opening in Dubai Mall. When's that happening?
So that will open in late September, early October. That's going to be quite a space. I mean, that's a 100,000 square foot park. That's wow. The biggest one we've built. I think we're the second or third largest kind of unit in the mall. That was the biggest risk I've ever taken in my life. We had just, I mean, now we can talk about it, I guess, a bit more. We closed a seed round. I think we'd closed a $4.5 million seed round, and I handed MR $13 million of post-dated checks. you have to either it's going to work or not work, and that one's going to work. I mean, that is, we are building an amusement park in the downtown of the fastest growing city on the face of the earth and the most visited place on the face of the earth. It is just wild. And so, yeah, it's a 100,000 square foot park. It's about three times the size of Aya.
Did you take learnings from House of Hype Kingdom and bringing them to party here as well?
Big time, yeah. For sure. I would say that, you know, that park was built very quickly, as things are in Saudi. You know, House of Hype Dubai has been a year and a half long project. It's extraordinary, and it's very well thought out. The retail, the F&B, the immersive theater components, it's built for the Dubai audience. I think, you know, it's going to set a new global standard for, you know, this category of location-based entertainment. And no better place to do it in.
Well, more and more people coming to town, as we've seen with the tourism numbers, as we've seen with the passenger numbers, the main airlines and other. And that will be music to the ears of our special guest this first half of the show. The founder and CEO of Hyperspace is Alexander Heller. So, Alexander, well, you've been telling us and painting this beautiful picture of your babies, of course, House of Hype, soon to open in Dubai Mall. Aya Universe down at Wafi Mall, the people will know, of course, and those that travel regularly to Riyadh will have seen the first delivery of House of Hype. Let's talk tech, if we can, because you have taken... It's almost this, you know, a lot of people will be retrofitting space with tech at the moment, but you've sort of counter-engineered that. You've looked at it from the other point and go, hang on, no, let's forget the space. Let's just take it tech and bring that to the space first and foremost. How important is the tech element to your delivery? And in terms of investment into tech, how do you stay one step ahead?
Well, I think, you know, for us, it's, you know, we can separate it into kind of two pieces here. So you have like the physical tech hardware that obviously is powered by content, and then you have the software behind it. And so the physical tech hardware is not necessarily novel. It's fiber optics and LED screens and projectors, et cetera, and then kind of unique applications and, like, you know, kind of R&D around fabricated items and kind of, yeah, novel formats, essentially, to present technology in a space that allows the content to really come alive. But I always say, when we design our spaces, we kind of start with, you know, what's the product that we're selling in Aya? I mean, for me, it's partly entertainment, but it's also content. It's like, what do you take out of Aya? You know, if you grab someone's phone on the way out the door, I'm going to guess they have about 100 pictures of themselves in Aya, and if they have kids with them, there's probably like 250. I've seen this many times. And so that's what I'm selling. I'm selling an extraordinary picture of you. I'm selling, you know, your opportunity to, you know, effectively broadcast your kind of, you know, physical self into your kind of digital identity, your social medias, et cetera. I think there's a statistic around this. About 40% choose the 40% of millennial and Gen Z audiences choose their next destination based on where they can take the best picture.
Wow.
And so we use technology in a way to basically present you in the space. And so you're supposed to feel something, obviously. It's a highly immersive world. You feel like you're really kind of part of, you know, living on this dystopian sort of planet as you go through Aya and House of Hype in a different way. But, you know, technology as it kind of relates to the way that someone's able to capture an extraordinary moment of themselves is a different piece of it.
And Alex, then, sorry to interrupt you there, but you're a bright man, and all of our listeners are like, wow, I'd love to do that. And then you may have put one or two off by saying 20 million starting cap to get to the table. What about the small businesses out there who want to learn from you, who want to draw people to their business? What lessons could you give them?
I mean, I think retail is growing more and more experiential. I think that the customer demands more. I think experiences are, you know, something that we try to capture in every single meal we eat and every single store we visit and any single sort of product that we try to buy in a physical world. So I think businesses need to think about how to attract customers more and more. I mean, I catch myself in that loop all the time. Why am I buying something from this store going to that restaurant versus the other one? It's because I feel something when I'm there. And so it's in a very micro format, but the experience economy, and I would also kind of, you know, we talk a lot about the joy economy in our business. These are things that are very present that, you know, really correlate to consumer habits in a massive way today. Mm. We're just doing it on a very extreme format because that is the product ultimately, the joy, the entertainment, the experience.
What's the future? What's the future hold for Hyperspace? What's the vision?
So it's a, you know, multi-brand business. I think that was something that we set out to do at the beginning. We saw various opportunities across the space. You know, it's, I never appreciated product market fit until I went to Saudi Arabia, because when we opened up Aya, people just showed up. I did not really have to work for my customer. Yeah. And, you know, when we opened up Aya, we were just, you know, out of the end of a funding round. We're going to move into another funding round. So we were a bit tight on capital. And so we weren't spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars every month on digital ads and stuff like that. So we just had to be creative about how to bring customers through the door. You know, when we moved to Saudi, we had to really fight for a customer. And so for us, I think, you know, we're going to really focus on expanding that Aya brand because the customers just seem to love it. And, you know, that's, that product market fit is extraordinary that we've achieved it in the way that we have in such a short amount of time. So that's a big piece of it. US market is key. So we're opening up one park in the U.S. market, which will be announced shortly, and we're looking at a few other opportunities. There's a couple other things in Saudi that are exciting for us to explore, and then Asia is a key market for us as well. We're looking at a few opportunities there, but mostly I would say, you know, identifying franchise partners, because that's a, you know, a cost-effective way, you know, and a kind of asset-light way for us to expand our business, and then really identifying what are the two or three markets going to be over the next, say, 18 to 24 months where that we enter, because we believe that they're going to perform the way that Dubai performs.
I mean, you are at the apex, and it's fascinating. You know, whenever we get a pioneer, an entrepreneur, a businessman sitting in that seat, we always ask the question about advice. What's the advice you give to a younger self, a younger you, or equally, what's the advice you give to an aspiring entrepreneur? I think many will be listening on intently at the moment, because you're at the apex of two of the most competitive industries in the world, two of the most cutthroat industries in the world, entertainment technology, coming together as one. What have you learned along the journey, and is anything you'd do differently or not?
I mean, of course, there's things that I naturally do differently. Certain things I wish I'd learned certain lessons faster. I wish I hadn't gone through certain processes to learn those lessons, because I probably would have focused on building elements of my business that were super successful, you know, and giving all the attention to that. But, you know, I'm young, and there's a lot of exciting opportunity in this space, and there's, you know, a lot of things that are, you know, I think are worth pursuing. And so you kind of live and you learn in that sense. We're very fortunate that we built a great and kind of highly, you know, kind of revenue generative business to this point, which is exciting. I would say in terms of advice, you know, I think one of the best pieces of advice, you know, across, you know, any life, but obviously as an entrepreneur, you know, to just let things kind of roll over your shoulders, to you know, there's a lot of you're fighting out there in building a business, and to just not take things terribly seriously, just let kind of problems move over your shoulder, because forward momentum is everything when you're starting a company. And also say, you know, I think it's, you know, in retrospect, you know, there are 27, 28 year olds out there that have interesting ideas for a business. You probably should not start a business when you're 27 or 28 years old. Ooh. I did when I was 20. I came up with the idea for Hyperspace when I was 27. We really got going when I was 28. That's probably far too young to start a business. You need more experience than that. And you'll get from 1 to 10 if you're lucky and you have a great idea and you have good investors, but it gets more challenging when you need to go from 10 to 20.
But perhaps, Alex, you don't need the experience from yourself. Perhaps you can get it from recruiting. So who are the three most important hires you've made in your company?
Well, I have two other co-founders who are, you know, really the pinnacle of the, you know, their industry, Rama Allen and Desi Gonzalez, COO and CCO. You know, they, you know, the likes of Google and What If and IDEO, and, you know, they have really these illustrious careers in the space. Like, there is zero chance that I get anywhere without these two. And they also, you know, we went from just me to the two of them joining as co-founders to them bringing eight people from their previous company with them. So we went from me to 11, like, you know, snap of a finger. So there was a business all of a sudden. That's essential. And you can hire around that, but it's just, you know, it's challenging. I would say, you know, you can build things off momentum, hype, enthusiasm, but when you get to that, I'm really running a business, it's probably good to go work at a few big businesses beforehand.
Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure. We're going to leave it there, unfortunately. But we have got many people texting in wanting to find out more. So how do they find out more? How do people find out more about the hyperspace universe?
You know, you can follow our socials, Aya Universe. You can go visit Aya Universe. Go buy a ticket at ayauniverse.com. House of Hype is opening up imminently. You can go to our hyperspace socials, hyper-space.com. You know.
You'll find it. That's for sure. Alexander, it's an absolute pleasure to see you yet again. Thanks so much indeed for popping in. Thanks for proffering some advice to others and telling your story as well. And all the best with all things hyperspace.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Starting Up with VirtuZone.
Starting a business and walking you through tax.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to Starting Up. Starting Up with VirtuZone. I'm joined by the VirtuZone chairman, Neil Petch, alongside me. A dedicated follower of fashion is Mr. P. He is a man who was, he's a natty dresser. Some of our listeners will get that phrase, that's for sure. He is a man who's always best turned out. Do you run out of clothes ever? Is laundry an issue for you?
I thought you were just going to go with the, you know, accusing me of laundering angle. But no, you've complimented me as a natty dresser. So thank you very much.
It's all to do with compliments, my friend. That's what it's all about. But laundry an issue at all for you or not? No?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, wow. As I told you, it's a frustrated issue because we have here an innovator who's made it work and I didn't a few years ago. But I say that we learn more from our mistakes than our successes. So there's that. And then secondly, we've all destroyed a rather... Why is it always the expensive items that get destroyed?
It's always the expensive item, isn't it?
Yeah. Why is that,
It's always
Tom?
Your favourite or expensive one, isn't it?
There we go.
These days, customers want a product or a service delivered ASAP. In fact, they want it yesterday. They want it an hour ago. So businesses have had to adapt to the demands. We now have 15-minute grocery delivery. You can order a taxi in seconds. And now we're joined by a man who promises to do your laundry in 24 hours or less. Founder and CEO of Laundry Heap is Dejan Dimitrov. He joins us live in studio. Dejan, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It's good to be here.
So let's talk history, if we can. Laundry Heap created in London, is that right?
Yeah, so we started in London about 9 years ago, but then we quickly expanded. So I think that's how we probably differ from many other businesses. We quickly expanded to other countries. And interestingly, Dubai was our second market. So I guess that's quite unique as well, that you go as a second market so far. From where we started, and now we're in 12 markets. We just announced expanding to Saudi. We're in 5 countries here in the GCC. We're getting bigger.
It's extra. I mean, you know, often we get guests here and starting up with VirtuZone from a variety of different industries, a variety of different backgrounds, etc. A lot of it might be, you know, new industry. A lot of it might be a new idea. I mean, laundry, you can date back to time immemorial. You know, since we started wearing loincloths, there's been laundry of some sort or other. So how do you stand out? How do you differentiate yourself from the competition?
Oh my God, yeah, I hear this so many times. And you're right, I mean, laundry was done by the Romans, right? Like like everyone does their own laundry. And it's such a boring thing to do anyway. It's a boring business anyway as well, right? And I often get asked, you know, like, what do you do? And when you say I work in a laundry company, you know, I get that face. But actually, because it's so simple and it's such a large industry, there is so much actually you can do there, especially using technology. So this is how we started. We saw an industry which hasn't changed for many, many years. Many of the businesses that are doing it, they've been around for 30, 40, 50 years. They're usually family-run businesses, and they haven't implemented technology. And obviously, technology has changed our lives so much in the last like 10 to 15 years specifically. So there is a lot to be done to improve that that process, to improve the speed, to open up the transparency to the customer, to make sure that the errors are minimized as much as possible.
So what are the classic mistakes that they're making then? If you see a laundry over there and you think, my God, I'd quite like to take that one over. And if you spot some mistakes so you know you can improve it, right? What are they?
Yeah, so I mean... first of all, they're quite inefficient because they're, as I mentioned, it's a very fragmented market, these family-run businesses where the whole family is involved in the process, which means that there is not a lot of machinery. People are doing everything by hand. When there are so many human processes involved, it means that there are a lot of errors. I think all of us have this horror stories of sending things to the dry cleaners. And as you mentioned, like, why is always the most expensive item that gets damaged? Just because there is no standard process and everything is done by hand and it's really open to errors. And then add the whole logistics on top of it, where so many things can happen. Add the whole experience of how you place an order. So this is where Wonderheap comes in, where we manage the full process from the cleaning and the logistics and the technology, customer experience and so on. So we make it very transparent, very easy, very accessible for customers to place an order, see what's going on, and get it back without the hassle.
Another thing that happens, Tom, is you know, you look for your favorite pair of trousers. They're no longer in your house. You got no idea where they are. Did I leave them when I was at the golf club last time, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the classic ones is it's at the laundry, but you don't know how to find it. And so there's that black hole of missing trousers. So have you solved that? Because if you have, Tom and I, we're going to be over.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, if you have ever walked into a dry cleaning store and you see all these hangers around, and before I started this business, I always thought, wow, these places are very busy. That's why they have so many items around. The truth actually is that all of these items are items that are left behind. So these are thousands and hundreds of thousands of items that they just keep for many, many years. Because either people haven't come to collect them or maybe they were left behind. And again, it's just this human process that people have tried to obviously optimize, you know, using the paper system. And then, but still, with many of our dry cleaners that we work with, when we started working with them, they didn't have even a computer, many of them. And now we're introducing all these devices. There is like CCTV, there is AI tracking the orders. Everything is scanned. There is a QR tag that comes with each item, each bag. So like we're basically eliminating all these errors. We're helping them with technology, transforming a very old industry to what it should be now, because the technology does exist. It just hasn't been applied to this industry because it's one of these kind of boring industries, but actually it's such a large problem that many people have.
And when you sort of talk about the automation of the process, I mean, are we talking about the process from start to finish, every element of that process?
No, I would say, so the biggest impact we have is really on the customer experience, because we want to make sure that people, first of all, people can easily place an order. You don't have to call anyone. You don't have to speak with them. It's just the same how, let's say, somebody like Kareem transformed the taxi industry. That's what we're doing for laundry and dry cleaning. So that's number one. Mm. Number two is adding this transparency. Like, you never know how much it's going to cost you. Where are your items? When are they coming back? Are they going to be ready? And so on. If you want to change, you don't have to commit about being at home. So this is the second part that we're adding. And the third layer is really helping the existing dry cleaners that we work with. So we work with large third-party cleaning facilities across all of our markets. So these are already serious businesses. They already have much better processes than your local dry cleaning store. But we're still adding this layer of technology on top of that, which they haven't implemented in the past because it was not their core. But now that you have to do logistics as well, there is another group of things that you need to fix.
Automation, obviously, part of the process. Another of your key sort of tenets is over-communication. And a lot of people go, hang on, tech's meant to take away the communication. So why are you over-communicating?
Well, it's over-communication if you want it, right? Like, people don't want to get a phone call every hour telling you how your laundry is or asking you a question about your laundry. But when you have an app, it's really you're serving all of these customers. Is the same as, again, if I give the taxi example, when you're waiting for your driver, if you really want to see where the driver is, how long it's going to take, you open your app, you check it. So it's about this self-service. And we add this transparency also to your laundry. So you know when your driver is coming to collect, you know that your order is in cleaning, you know when your order is going to be delivered. And you have the power, which is really what we add, is you have the power to do all these changes. You can reschedule it for another day, for another time. You can place another order, you can add another item, you can change the service. It's not an easy one. It's not a straightforward. There could be some questions. People are sending us special items like a wedding dress or your kind of famous, like a leather jacket, for example. So there are some items where we also need to ask your question. Mm. So it's just much more fluent experience that we provide.
Mm. People sending questions for Neil, and we will get to those in just a few moments' time. People also sending in questions for our special guest this show. Dayan Dimitrov is the founder and the CEO of Laundry Heap. A lot of people sending in their questions with regards to their laundry and their laundry needs as well. Dayan, you mentioned earlier on, you know, quite often laundries per se, there's this sort of tradition of family-owned business and keep it within the family, etc. Is it key to think global when you get into a business like this?
It depends, obviously, what you want to do with your business. But I would say for me as an entrepreneur, and I've seen it very often with other entrepreneurs, like for me, it's really key to think global. I mean, we live in this world where like everything is so global. People travel all the time, and it's so much easier as well to open a global business. So like sometimes I even get frustrated when I see entrepreneurs who they think kind of too small or too local. And what it means to think global is, and why it's important to start thinking that way from day one, is because then you set up all your processes, even all your technology, to be able to scale and to launch to other countries and other markets. You just leave yourself this level of flexibility that you can kind of adapt your business to where it will go in a couple of years. And nobody knows that in the beginning, but at least it leaves that space. And what I've seen, and we have also done some mistakes like that, but what I've seen that when you focus on a specific market, sometimes you just limit yourself too much. And then it's much harder to change even the mindset of your team and the technology. To add more currencies, to add more time zones, all of this, and you know, in logistics and customer experience, it's really problematic. And
think
then,
big, think extra large.
I think big is, I mean, obviously that's, you know, like a lot of people say that, but I think it's really valid, and it gets more valid every day. And technology is so accessible these days. So what is your reason to not think bigger?
Right? Something absolutely cool for our listeners, Tom, which Dayan gave me actually off air, is the name of your company. So Alex was in earlier, and he was telling us that he brought in a naming consultant who spoke to the universe, and they brought names down for him. Dayan said something which so many of us have done, actually. When naming your company, it's all about finding the domain, finding the .com that actually is available. The problem with that is that sometimes you don't have the name that you want. And your name is something that, of course, your customers can bond with, your staff can bond with. I don't know about you, Tom, but actually for me, Laundry Heap, it really creates a visual. So it achieves something there. But perhaps that's something we should be talking to our listeners about, all the challenges and opportunities behind naming your business and what
comes from. Do you have a challenge with it?
Yeah, I mean, so this is this was important from us in the beginning, that people hear what we do and they really get it. And I think as a business also, like even describing to investors or describing to you and your listeners, I think it's just with one sentence you tell what you do. It's very obvious as a business. But also we wanted like the name also to tell what we do. And yeah, I think it's important. And also like I've seen a lot of times people get creative around this kind of naming, you know, like with misspells and, you know, all
devowling and things like that.
I have a friend who has a business here, Skin Laundry. I thought that's quite cool. Clean your skin.
Right, questions flooding in. I've got less than a couple of minutes to get through these. So here's one for Neil. Hibby wants to know, could you tell us more about the family visa? Can anyone with a family apply for that? What's the difference between that and the golden visa, which allows me to sponsor my family?
Yeah, I think she's actually looking, there's a new one, there's a blue visa. And this is, you know, skywards have taken us through the colours, and now there's a blue visa, which is anyone in the environmental sector. The golden visa, the rules are constantly evolving. I think, you know, Dubai has hit and the UAE has hit upon something that has really facilitated the brain gain in the UAE. We've got some brilliant people here as a result of this, and the world's talking about it now. And they keep changing the rules so that, for example, the property that you own, they've lowered the expectations and so on. So keep talking to, a company that helps facilitate golden visas and green visas and blue visas. And definitely it's becoming more efficient for companies to enable people to sponsor their family under their golden visa. So if you're an employee out there, speak to your company about that, because perhaps you can change things.
We've also got questions coming through from Dayan. Probably the best way for us to wrap those up is to point them in the direction of Laundry Heap. I mean, how do people reach out to you guys? How do they get in touch?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they can use our website, laundryheap.ae here in Dubai, laundryheap.com, like across 12 different markets. They can download our app on all the app stores, and they can simply place an order. I think that's the best way to test the service. You can place an order. A couple of minutes later, a driver comes to your home. 24 hours later, you're clean, well ironed, folded, or however you want them, closer to the door.
Sold on it, that's for sure. Dayan, can't thank you enough. Thanks so much indeed for all the best with the business expansion, all the best for the summer as well, and we'll definitely catch up again soon.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
Big thanks to Dayan Dimitrov, founder and CEO of Laundry Heap, for joining us live on Starting Up with Virtues. Mr. P, should we do it again next week?
I think we should have one big final blow before the summer comes. And Tom, you are ever classy. You're the only man on radio that's ever said laundries have existed since men had loincloths.
I will take that one to my...
A caveman with class.
Yeah, take that one to the airport today, I think. looking forward to it. Yeah, we've got one more before a summer break. So more from VirtuZone, Neil and myself, next week. In the meantime, if you want to reach out to the VirtuZone team, as Neil was saying earlier on, they are online 25/7. Yep, you heard that one right. We didn't get it wrong. AI and tech, of course, informing decisions and advice there. So reach out to all things VirtuZone. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Starting up with VirtuZone on Dubai Eye 103.8.